Sai Ram, everybody. Where should I start other than that I've always been a Shirdi Baba devotee and got into with Baba in the year 2000. And since then I started with my Seva projects. And the Seva project being going to India and working in Baba's hospital. And I did that for the first 2-3 years. It was 3 times a year and then it went down to 1 a year. And during this time, I was going through my own personal crises and I lost my kids and my business and everything. So I turned more towards Baba to say that he has some plan for me. I have no idea what. And so I went to see Baba in 2006 for Guru Purnima. And during that time, I had written a book. And so, lucky for me, he picked me out from the crowd on Guru Purnima Day and took the book from me, asked me what the book was about. And at that time, I had started my own business and my business in WorkCom. And I had asked him whether 2 things I wanted. One was whether I could reunite with my children. And 2 is that because I started a new business, it was the right one and should I continue? And throughout this period of time, he was holding on to me while I'm still only thinking about how can I reach down and touch his feet without realizing that he's actually touching my both arms and massaging me through this whole conversation. And it was right here on the veranda in front of everybody. This is going on. And then he tells me that, don't worry, my children will be fine and they'll come back to you. And that whatever your work you're doing is good, continue doing it. So that was an indication for me that my new job is going to be good and B, sometime my children will be back. And then I got a chance to put him back in the wheelchair and that's when I got a time to lift his legs and massage it and put it on the wheelchair. And so I said, yes, this is done now. So now I get on with my life. And sure enough, my business really flourished, just took off and my one daughter came back to me within a year. And I'm reunited with her. She's in the Bay Area and I see her every 2 weeks. And I then had problems with my business. And my business partner and I were now going through a business divorce and that was last year. But then I realized that he doesn't want me to have a partner either personally or in business. And fortunately for me, that cleared in 3 months. And then in January, I get a email. And Haiti earthquake happened on January 12th and I wanted to go. But I didn't have the guts to go alone and I didn't know if the Baba group would go. So I get a call from the main doctor and then he asked me if I'm ready to come. And I said, absolutely, but which hotel are we going to stay? And he said, no, you're going to stay in a tent. I said, oh Lord, I'm almost 60 years old. I've never camped. I hate sleeping bags. I want my creature comforts. I want room service and all that fun stuff that money buys. So I said, well, Baba wants me to go work. So now I'm going to choose between working or being in my comfort zone. So I said, okay, I'll just go because Baba is going to take care of it. So I went and bought sleeping bags, which I'd never done before. So anyway, I bought all this stuff. And then through the flight to Miami, I'm just praying to Baba. I said, whatever work you give me, I will do. But please give me a bedroom, a bed, and a bathroom with a door. So we land up in Santo Domingo, and sure enough, we get the news that one of the Baba devotees, his house was saved. And he has offered his home to all of us who come for medical work. So I said, hey, now Baba is really listening to us. So now we are excited. We took the 8-hour bus ride from Santo Domingo to Haiti. And this was in February. So I was the second group that went to Haiti. The first group was all only doctors who had gone to kind of evaluate and then see what can be done. And the second group was the one that was going to start with the actual working there. Fortunately, we were 16 of us, which were 9 were doctors and 6 were non-doctors. And so because we were so many doctors, we were able to service 2 churches. One is what we call as the big church and one is the small church. And they both happened to be in downtown Port-au-Prince. And both fortunately were not damaged by the earthquake. And so because there were so many doctors, I got to go to the hospital, which is where they needed orthopedists, because most of these people had had amputations with infections. And so they needed orthopedists and they needed anesthesiologists. So we had a lady anesthesiologist in our group and I was the orthopedist. So a pathologist, Baba devotee, who worked at that hospital had no job because the pathology department was damaged. So he offered to take us every day to the hospital, dropped us in the hospital around 9 o'clock in the morning, and then around 6 he would come pick us up. And so we were there to work. And it was just incredible. The U.S. Army had set up MASH-like tents everywhere in the front yard of the hospital because most of the hospital buildings were damaged. And there were two or three of them which were in good condition. So two of them were used as the operating room. One had two small operating rooms and the other one had two. The French people came. They did an excellent job. They had their own everybody. They had their own anesthesiologist. They had their own orthopedist. They had their own circulating nurse, recovery room nurse. They brought all their equipment. So they ran the whole, that part of their hospital all by themselves with no local help. While we were all different doctors, I met doctors from every part of the country. I met doctors from every part of the world. I met doctors from Russia, from Europe. And it was incredible to see how everyone was there, A, because we wanted to be there. And B, everyone was so happy to be there to take care of these people. And the best part of the whole 5 days that I worked in the hospital was the spirit of the people. The Haitians are, A, to begin with, they're some of the most beautiful people I've seen, not only on the outside, but on the inside, especially the men and women. If we had to get their bodies, I think we would have to be in the gym 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days of the year. I mean, they were beautiful to look at, beautiful teeth. I know they have no money to go to a dentist. We spend thousands of dollars every year to get these whatever teeth we get. I get gold filling in my teeth and whatever, but these are all beautiful teeth. Children are all beautiful. And the spirit, no matter what you told them, they were ready. They wanted to get better. So even if they lost their leg or part of their arm, the spirit was there that, okay, take care of it so we can go with the next step. And the one that really impressed me was this 13-year-old girl who had lost both her parents, and she had lost her right arm amputation, left leg amputation, and I'm changing her dressing, and she's smiling and asking me where I came from and telling me how grateful she is that we have come to help her. Not one thought that she has no right arm and no left leg. And here, I couldn't show my emotion to her other than saying that I'm happy to be there and happy to do what I'm doing. But looking at them smiling, tears were not something that we could handle. Because they were smiling, we couldn't show that we are affected by what has happened to them. It's a natural disaster. And secondly, the spirit, that they are eager to get on with their life. And we told them to come back in 2 days. They came back in 2 days. Some of them had no place to stay. So they stayed in the tents. The tents were made for an emergency room, for an intensive care. The government had brought every equipment you could think of, especially for the intensive care. Other than that, it was in a tent and a temperature of 120 degrees in that tent. But people were there. The nurses were working and they had shift work, so they changed shift every 8 hours. There was this one group, it's based in LA. I forget the name. It's a big group dealing only with medical doctors and nurses. Any of us, any doctors can join them. Only thing is they want a 2-week commitment to wherever you go. They'll send you anywhere. There's a disaster in the world. And I wanted to go with through them, but again, the 2-week commitment is too much. I don't have that kind of time. I have 1 week and I can go every 2 months and I can do it. They have an excellent organization. I mean, they can mobilize people within 48 hours to go anywhere in the world and have every specialty coming there to help. So I had general surgeons, I had urologists, eye surgeons, general surgeons, and orthopedists. We were 3 orthopedists. One was I, one was from New York, and one was from Nepal, an Indian guy by the name of Govinda. So it was like Krishna was there. And one of the nicest people you could meet. I mean, I just met him and boom, we were instantly, we knew the 3 of us. We had to take care of the 2 ORs that we had. Then we had to take care of all the people that needed dressing changes. And then we needed to go to each tent and see who had any orthopedic injuries. And lo and behold, everyone had an orthopedic injury. We were all to see each one of them, mostly to do their dressing changes. We in the end taught the nurses because some of them needed to be changed 2-3 times during the day because of infection. With orthopedics, we could not do any major surgery in the sense of if they were in the United States or any other country, if you had a broken bone, we would open it up and fix it with plate screws and things of that nature. There being that the operating room was very basic, so it was not clean. So orthopedics, especially bone and infection, they really become best friends for the rest of their lives. So we could not do any surgery where we had to open the bone. So we had to do everything from the outside. So we put screws and these frames from the outside so that we don't open up that bone to fix these. So this was literally like a trauma center. What you see in MASH, that's exactly how we did. The operating room, we had very little, we had no running water. So we had to wash our hands, and a nurse would be standing and putting water on our hands while we wash our hands. The first day I went, I didn't even have OR clothes. I just put the gown, patient, the sterile gown right on top of me. And we had to depend on the local staff. Prior to the earthquake, the local staff, medical staff was on strike because the government had not paid them for 4 months. So when the earthquake happened, majority of them actually left the country, either through Canada or to United States, because they were fed up and they didn't want to help their own people. So the first 2 days, it was us doctors and nurses coming from different parts of the country. We took over the operating room. We were handling. So I was going to the tent, finding out which one needs surgery, take his name down, take the bed name and do that kind of stuff. Then come back to the book and write the names on the book while the other two surgeons were doing the surgery. So this is how we were trying to coordinate it. Then after a while, I did the surgeries while the other surgeon then went around doing this job. So we, between the three of us, we had to be like a coordinator. We had to see that who was more important because everyone needed surgery, but one was more important than the other. And the only decision who could make that was one of us. So we had to figure out if patient A, B, C, whether the C was more important than the A, and more important being with infection. So if any open wound, that patient was taken first because you would just get more infections. And we saw conditions that we would only see or read about in books. I saw a case of tetanus. Tetanus is an infection where if you get that, people go into convulsions. And I saw this girl with a knee infection, and she had already gone through her convulsions. And she was almost comatose. But she had this infection in her knee, which had to be taken out. Otherwise, she would continue to be going into tetany. So the medical guys clear her medically. They give her medications, IV, and then get her out of the coma. Then I did the surgery of cleaning up the knee. Then she goes back, and then the medical doctors take over the care. And talk about coordination. We have never met them ever before. They have never seen us before. But just we knew I had to do this part, they had to do that part, they had to get the blood test, they had to clear it. Anesthesia came and said, yes, we'll do this. And just by clockwork. And then at 6, there would be no electricity. So we had to finish everything by 6. There was no lights, so we all carried headlights. And you'll see in one of my pictures, I'm wearing it. Because, again, the lights are not like how we have all these bright lights in the operating room. So many times for us, we couldn't even see it. And some doctors didn't bring it. So we were acting as light holders for them so they could do the surgery. So as general surgeons were doing surgeries because a lot of abdominal injuries and everything. So the first visit was mainly for me in the operating room, while the other group of doctors from our team went to the big church and the little church. And the big church, they saw patients. So they saw patients about 300 a day. And between 4 doctors in the big church and about 2 or 3 doctors in the small church, all these patients were seen. And at that time, everything was related to the earthquake. That is either with injuries or with cardiac problems because they were stressed, hypertension because they were again stressed, they had not slept. In the 5 days, I was in the OR and everything while all these other doctors were doing this other job. Ronnie is the Sai Baba devotee whose house we were staying. Ronnie was actually in his house when the earthquake happened. At that time, he got on his knees and he was doing Gayatri Mantra, praying to Baba, just, save my house. while his wife and daughter and granddaughter all ran out of the house. Benita, who is, we'll see a photograph of her, she's an elementary school teacher. She was visiting her niece in that hospital on the day of the earthquake. And the earthquake happened. She was buried under all this rubble. Somehow she saw some light. She started with Gayatri Mantra at that time itself. And there were a lot of children around with her who had come to visit their families or whatever. And then through the light, she was able to dig a hole from where she was, almost about 12 feet of rubble. She comes out of the hospital, saves all these children. Now, the Sai Center was completely gone. And the Sai Baba photo you'll see in the picture is the only thing that was saved, because the Sai Baba Center was in the downtown Port-au-Prince. And it's interesting, if you see Baba's photo, there is a little part missing in the middle. It looks exactly like the map of Haiti. So that you'll see on the picture. And anyway, they then decided that Ronnie's house, which was saved, I mean, you're talking about no damage. I mean, not even one. And you'll see the pictures. There wasn't one building in Port-au-Prince which was not damaged. Either they were flattened out like a sandwich, or they were leaning to one side, or one house was fine, the other part was totally gone. So that means you couldn't live there. And Ronnie's house, nothing. So he then contacted the center, Domingo Center, because they are in close contact even before the earthquake, because they are kind of close to each other. And he offered his house for the purposes of the medical camp when Baba gave the permission that the camp should start. And so Benita, being a Baba devotee, was contacted by Ronnie and asked if she could be of help. And she said, yes, she will help. And now she's doing it. She cooks for us. She makes the most delicious vegetarian food. So we would have a nice hot breakfast before we went to work. We all made sandwiches for us, peanut butter jelly sandwich. It never tasted better ever before. I mean, they were awesome by lunchtime. So we had two sandwiches for each of us. Then we made sandwiches for all the translators, and we made sandwiches extra to give to the patients. And we would do this in the morning. So we would wake up around 5. There's no running water, but there was good clean water. So we learned to take, bath in a bucket, which I'm used to in India. Only thing, I wanted my water hot. So it happened to be that I was the oldest in the group during that second trip. So I kept saying that I don't want to sleep with anybody who snores. So each one got illuminated, and I got the bedroom. And there were 3 bedrooms. So I got one bedroom all to myself, which Baba's gift again, which was right next to a closed door bathroom. I said, oh my God, I can't get any better than this. And then the others slept dormitory style. Some slept in Baba's room, some slept in a living room, and some slept in the patio. And the nights were very pleasant. Days are very hot, but the nights were very pleasant, always a nice breeze. So, and the ladies were downstairs, which by the second night they were so hot. So the ladies came up, and they were given a special room for the ladies only, and the men would be separate. Of course, there's no running water, so the toilet was all with the water, whatever, stored water. But Ronnie and his gang of people took care of all of that. So we had always plenty of water. She used to make delicious hot breakfast. Could be upma, could be porridge. I mean, she just did delicious food for us in the morning. Nice hot Haitian coffee. Haitian coffee is very tasty. And then we would stand in line and sing bhajans and do the sandwiches. Then after that, we would do our actual prayers to Baba. We would sit in the Baba room and do a couple of bhajans, do an aarti. And then we would have our breakfast, and then at 7:45, we would be ready to go to work. And the transportation was in the form of trucks, like pickup trucks. So we'd just get up on the truck. You'll see pictures of us standing on the truck, and a couple of us in the truck, but the rest of us were standing outside on the truck. And that's how we went through downtown. And it took us about 30 to 45 minutes to get to the hospital or to the big church. They are close by. The small church was a little away. The nice part of the small church is that it is attached to an orphanage. And the orphanage is run by a local Haitian man whose wife and he, using their own money, are running it. And they also have a music school with it. So they have regular classes, and then they teach music, and they teach all different instruments, and it's just amazing to see. And these are all, most of them were either the mother, most of them mother and father gone, or most of them either mother gone or father gone or something. And so there was, they had no family. And so they are being taken care of these. And so they were part of the patients to be seen. And plus they were part of for the young adults to get involved in doing activities with them and everything else. Because our group was so large, we could do so many things. Then every week we started having these groups coming in. And then when I came back, I just could not get over Haiti. I just could not get over what those people have gone through. I learned the history more from them. You know, you hear history or you read, but you kind of forget what had happened to them. And because we had to fly into Santo Domingo, I ended up being a little privileged that UN was chartering flights for doctors to be flown from Haiti to Santo Domingo because there were no flights from Haiti. And because I was leaving a little earlier than the whole group, I contacted this person in UN, just all on the phone, took care of everything, and I got a flight. And that's the time when I saw the difference between Haiti and the Dominican Republic. It's one island. But you can see the demarcation of how this Haiti is completely eroded, completely all the trees are gone. And while Santo Domingo and Dominican Republic is lush, it's green, it's just a gorgeous, gorgeous island, which Haiti, I'm sure, was at one stage. So the second trip, I came back and immediately I told the physician coordinator, I want to go back again. So I looked at my schedule and I said, I want to go in April. So every week they would get all these doctors and non-doctors signing up and everything. And so we were the group to go in April. We happened to be 9 who went on in April. We happened to reach, when if you count the numbers, is 9 again, Baba 9. It happened to be that when we left, Haiti was also the 9. So we figured, hey, this 9 number is a big lucky number for us. Anyway, we were 5 doctors and 4 non-doctors. And I got chosen to be a team leader, which I don't like. I don't like to be a leader. I want to be the doer. I want hands-on. Anyway, so I said, okay, Baba is now making me do something which I don't want to do, but he's telling me that I have to do it. Okay, I did. So the problem was because there were so many issues of money and all that which was not taken care of by the prior teams. Everybody said, oh, we'll do it next time. Now, these translators are local people. Of course, they don't have a job. So, of course, they expect money, which I don't blame them. They don't have money. They don't have a job. They don't have a building to go to work. But everything was left like each team leader will give what they want. And I thought that was wrong because I could go and say, gee, I have money. I'll give them X number of dollars. The next team member leader goes, says, I think that's way too much. We'll give him less. And it's not good for these people who are working. They need to have consistency. It's like a job here. You can't pay one employee $9 and the same employee doing the same job because you like him or her. You're going to give her $20. So I had to settle and figure these money issues with the brother of the church, with the father of the church, then with, of course, the Satya Sai Foundation, with Ronnie. And then there were more and more things came about of some people not being doing it legally. And so this was my job. I had to now become a mediator for all these kind of issues. Secondly, then, the pharmacy was run by the non-doctors. And again, pharmacy is very demanding. Because you need to know the common names because the doctors would write the prescription. They would write very legibly. So all that was worked out. But still a lot of them, we had a young adult who is in software, didn't know anything about medicine, but smart kid. So he was one. Then we had a retired biochemist who came. So she had some knowledge of that. Then we had a reporter from the Washington Post of Washington, D.C. So she came as the third non-person. And then the fourth non-person is again in the software in Sacramento. So now I'm the only sort of free-flowing doctor to be coordinating this because I didn't have many orthopedic patients to see there. In the sense is most of these patients now on the second visit were all with chronic. That means these people have not been seen by a doctor for years. These children have not been seen by doctors for years. So we had malnourished children, we had children who had every infection you could think of, we had adults with infection, we had young kids with hypertension, which was all related to stress. So we saw a lot of post-traumatic stress syndrome. And I'm talking about significant blood pressures in 8 and 9 year olds who have not slept from January 12th. Because every noise they hear, they are afraid. They don't have place to stay. None of them have schools to go to. There is no haircutting salon or there's no beauty salon. Everything is gone. And you can actually see the signs, but there's no building. So these kids have no school to go to, elementary or high school. And most of these kids want to do something. Like the girl who was helping us in translation wants to be a doctor. Then there were two doctors who had one more year left to finish and then become a doctor. Now they can't. There is no university. They don't know what to do. They don't know where to go. The government is doing nothing to direct anything. 2 months after I went in February and in April, and you're looking at no changes. The rubble is still there. In fact, there's one high school which supposedly had 800 students who died, and they're all still under that rubble because not one part of that rubble has been removed. So there is no rehab of any sort going on. The hospital situation, because I thought I'll go back to work in the hospital one day if I could swing it. I went there and they had changed it. Because the orthopedic infection rate was so high, they stopped doing orthopedics in this general hospital. So now all of the orthopedics was taken over by a hospital called as New Hope Mission Hospital. And they had nice operating rooms and clean air, and they would do all sorts of surgeries. So a lot of these patients would get transferred there, and most of the care, of course, would be all free. So at least that had changed. So I didn't have time to go and connect in that hospital to do something, which I might do the next time I go. But that part has changed. The American government did an unbelievable job. They had this big machine where they would actually take the water from the humid air that is in Haiti and then process it and then give us that water to drink. Because bottled water was tough. So in February, we drank this water that the U.S. Army people were making right there in the front yard of the hospital. Everywhere there was security. So we never ever felt that we were going to get attacked or anything. I mean, we saw UN and U.S. Army people everywhere. Because I had to fly from the UN charter flight, I went to the UN quarters, and it was like a whole city. I mean, unbelievable city that they have built. And they have people from all over the world. They are, each country has been representing by their, either the army or somebody, and they're all living there and all working to do whatever they can in Haiti. And they're all coming either in a 6 month or a 2 year period. I met a police officer from Madagascar, one I met from Turkey, and we were all eating lunch together. And you're looking at every part of the world sitting with you and, all in the same. All have come only to help. And the best part of it is what Baba did for us. Working in the hospital, I found out we were the only group of doctors and non-doctors to live in a house. Everyone else that came lived in a tent. Everyone who's lay, they took a bath outside, standing with, no running water, so a bath like we did, but open air. When they went to poop, went to the public place, which I don't want to go. I mean, look at Baba, what he did for us as compared. Now, some of them stayed in a hotel. Like you must have seen Sanjay Gupta, he's a CNN neurosurgeon. He was there throughout this period of time. He used to go in and out, but he was there. He and a few of them stayed in one hotel, which was still okay. But otherwise, everyone else had to stay in tents. The safety was never an issue for any of us. But also, we didn't go anywhere in the evening. We would finish around 6, come home, and then rest for a little bit, then do bhajans. And then by 7:30, we would eat. Because by 8:30, we had to be done. There's no electricity. So we could not, if you could read, we had to read with our little flashlight. But there was no electricity, so we went to sleep. And then we had to wake up at 5. And, of course, where we lived were these whole bunch of cock-a-doodle-doos. They started at 4 o'clock with their alarm. So we had to wake up around 4 listening to the music. It was right there next door. But it was The experience, again the same thing. The people, only this time was very, very sad. They were very happy that they were getting medications from us. But they were asking if we could give them food and water. And we had not planned for that because we were only going to take care of the infection. So we gave the brother some money and told him, please get some food. So we give food to these people because they don't even have. So all our money that our governments are giving, I have no idea where it's going. It was not going to these people. And we saw 300 of them every day. Out of them, which were about 90 of them, kids. We took milk powder because the mothers have no milk. So we had to give milk powder for the children to be fed. So again, it was just, all I can say is we need to continue this. This has to be long term. It's not going to finish off in another month. These people need help for I don't know how long. We need both doctors and non-doctors to come. There's enough work to do. We need human beings. We need hands. And we need the love to come there. It's not anything gross. It's not anything terrible. Somehow Baba gives you the strength to not cry and to deal with it. And you do that only when you come back home. You cry in the plane, which is great. No problem. And the last time we were there, the priest gave all of us these little things that says Haiti with the flag, and then gave a flag of Haiti, and then gave us a little medallion of St. Francis, because it's a St. Francis church. So I keep that in my pocket, and I'm wearing this all the time. And my patients just want to know all the time about my Haiti trip and what's going on, and so happy that we are all helping. We leave on a Saturday, and we come back on a Saturday. Going from LA, there are no direct flights. So you have to fly to Miami, and then from Miami to Haiti. Miami to Haiti is a little over an hour flight, so it's very short. From here to Miami is there. Even if you're a non-doctor, there's very easily can get into, you'll get involved in the giving the medications, explaining to the patients how to give medications, and the translators help. They're there. So, and there's a pharmacist who's a local Haitian woman who knows all the meds are there. And we have every medication that we can think of. Every week, doctors are going, we are taking medications. So there's plenty of medications to give. We're carrying milk food. I am not a center person now for the last couple of years. And I found out from the group in Sacramento that the centers were not announcing often enough about this. And I was a little taken aback because I believe we all want to help, but we all as human beings need a little bit more guidance or a little push. And so there was a lot of myths and a lot of non-communication. So they didn't know, and they thought it was only for doctors. It's not. It's for everybody who can help. The way it is set up now is you have to only pay for the flight. The pickup from the airport is paid for, the room where we stay is paid for, the food is paid for, transport is paid for. So we have no expenses. These people are just so grateful that we are coming and helping their people. And they are also afraid that we'll stop, and they don't want that to happen. So I'm just hoping that more and more centers keep telling people. Everyone is needed, not only doctors. And we doctors can help with the medication part. And believe me, everyone goes, your life is going to change. And we are blessed that Baba is there to he just takes care of everything for us. We have never had one untoward. None of us fell sick. You have to take vaccinations. I ended up taking 8 injections before I went and some pills for malaria. No reaction of anything other than getting 8 needles, but big deal. But none of us fell sick. None of us had any issues, anybody. It was like we were meant to be there, and we were there to take care of people. And when you see these people and then you listen to them and listen to their anguish, listen to what they have been done for the last several decades or more, and how they still have that hope. We didn't go to the beach. We could see it from far. And I know that it can be really a beautiful resort, and it could be all brought together. It's just that this land and people have been massacred for generations. So now the rainy season is now. So maybe it'll start now. But in February, we didn't have any. I mean, I took everything that REI said, this is good for mosquitoes, I bought it. This is good for mosquitoes, I bought it. Didn't use even one. So I just gave it all to Ronnie and said, give it to the people. We each took two tents, not to live, but to give it to people. So with the first group we went, we had 32 tents that we just gave to Ronnie, and then Ronnie gave it to people who need it. Because there are many people who have no tents to live. So they live on the streets. The tents you should see, I mean, I don't know what will happen now in the rainy season. Because there is, the land is so eroded, you can have rivers everywhere in Port-au-Prince. And if you really look at Port-au-Prince, some of these photographs, they have beautiful hillsides. But they built these crummy homes all over the place. And every hillside, all homes are just gone. Crumble. They were made out of cardboard. They're just gone. Completely gone. And again, it's, the topography is beautiful, but it's just been ruined completely. And I hope that our government, all our governments are going to do something. I know they're giving money, but I think they need to have somebody from within US to divert the funds properly, because it's going to somebody's pocket. It's not coming to the common Jane and Joe that we took care of in the church. And the orphans, to see them, it was sad. Yeah. I mean, people are doing it by hand. If they do it by hand, it'll take another 20 years to get one rubble out. I mean, you're talking about gazillion pieces of cement everywhere. Every building. You can't lift it. They're just too heavy. I might have seen one of those, whatever those things they call, that scoops with a big thing. Yeah. Only one in that whole of Port-au-Prince. And I kind of, we went through all streets, because Jesus is the driver that Ronnie has, who again lost his job. He's a car mechanic. He has no shop to repair. So he, being a Baba devotee, he was given the job of a driver to take us everywhere. Because transport is a problem. You should see their buses. I mean, they're cute looking. They're all nicely painted, bright and all that. But there are like 40 of them in one little pickup truck. Where the heck are we going to go? And I found out that the next group that went after us, 1 or 2 days, there was no gas in all of Port-au-Prince. So all these doctors walked to the hospital, to the church, to see the patients with their, because we carry water, we carry food, we carry our own medications. And talk about teamwork. It was amazing. We all came from different centers. And the best part is we all came because we wanted to. And when that is there, when your heart is in it, nothing matters. Nothing ever matters. So, and like my friend, he's a non-Baba devotee, and he heard I'm going. So I gave him the information. I said, go on Google, read about Baba. If you're uncomfortable, you don't have to come. You don't have to pray. You don't have to do anything. He sat for all our bhajans. He said, started saying Sai Ram to everybody. I mean, he just ate all the vegetarian food. He couldn't say how wonderful vegetarian food was. And this is a meat eater. So it was just great to just see a transformation happening. And he already wants to come again in September or so. So it's just one of those things. And last I want to say is that I'm involved with Venice Family Clinic here in Venice, California. And it's a voluntary clinic, the largest in the United States. And that really got me even more doing the same seva in the United States, about 10 minutes from my house. And I'm hoping that that module of Venice will go all over the country to give care to people who don't have insurance or who are poor. Because they're doing it for the last 40 years. In Venice, California. It's amazing. Just amazing people. I met some amazing doctors. And I know every doctor that I know will volunteer. The only problem is malpractice. So if we have somebody to cover us for malpractice, we'll all volunteer anywhere. And UCLA does it for Venice. So I think UCLA is top on the list. They are just amazing. That's what they do. And it's a win-win situation. They have medical students and all coming through this clinic. They get hands-on experience. It's just unbelievable. How can it go wrong in any part of our country? And there's money everywhere. So all you have to do is get people to contribute, and doctors will come. Sairam?
Thank you.